Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Hello, hello, hello. Back again to the Human Technology Podcast. I'm super happy that you tuned in and you join me for this episode. This episode is a bit of a, let's say, philosophical background episode that I want to record. And it was triggered by a sticker I saw on a Tesla car on a German Autobahn. And the sticker said Auto Hui, Elon Pfui, which is the German equivalent to stickers like I bought this car before Elon went crazy, or I bought this car before I learned that Elon is an idiot. And over the last weekend that I spent in beautiful Mallorca Island, I sorted out my thoughts and I found it pretty interesting to make it little analysis about what does it mean, and I decided to go with the episode. So the fundamental question here is, can we separate art and artist? Can we separate a product from its creator? Should we do this? Can we do this? Should we do this? Or is it impossible? Are the two, the product and the creator, the art and the artist, so deeply connected that a separation is not possible? And I will talk about four aspects of this one. One is a more or less general reflection. Can we do this or not? The second one is, what does it mean for the tech world? How is this reflected in the tech world? The third part is an analysis of the pros and cons of a strong link between a brand and a person. Like Elon Musk and Tesla, like Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook, like Gottlieb Daimler and Carl Benz and Mercedes-Benz. And then at the very end, I will have a closer look at the situation around Elon Musk and use all the thoughts that I had before to have a closer look at this, to make an analysis about this one. So let's start with the basic thoughts on the topic. The separation of art and artist can be considered from a philosophical, ethical, and maybe even aesthetic perspectives. And there are a couple of fundamental approaches that very often fall along a couple of thought lines. So I have identified five thought lines here. Basically, it's the question, yes, you can or you cannot do this. Those are the two, let's say, extremes that you have. And number one is the so-called work immanent perspective, which means the autonomy of art. So art is seen as an independent creation. This and a piece of art has its own life. This view sees art as something to be considered independently of the creator. A book, a poem, a song, a painting has its own existing, and beyond the biography or the moral integrity of its creator, it has its own life. It has had its own right of existence. One example here, the German composer Richard Wagner created some great music, some great operas and symphonies, as a classical artist, but he had a very anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish view, which we as of today, and even at that time, it was highly, highly problematic. And his work was misused by the Nazis in the Nazi time. And so very questionable artist. But if you listen to this, and I'm not a great fan of classic music, but that is some cool stuff you can listen to. The second viewpoint is the biographical perspective. So art in this one is seen as an expression of the artist. So this position views the artwork as not separable, as inseparably linked to the artist, meaning they are one. The creator shapes the work through his views or her views, experiences, ideologies. So they had both closely connected, which is exactly the opposite of number one. Number two here, the biographical perspective is the one that says, no, you cannot separate it. So if you have a writer that expresses racist or sexist belief in his or her work, that shall influence how we see this person. The third perspective is the ethical perspective. So this means that we, as the audience, we have the moral responsibility. And the argument is that consuming the work of a morally questionable creator is ethically problematic. So if we listen to a song from a problematic person, if we listen to we see a theater play of a problematic artist, then this is questionable. And you directly or indirectly support or legitimized the behavior of the creator. Yeah, it's like the debate about R. Kelly or Roman Polanski. No doubt, great artistic work, great art, they have an output, but morally, absolutely questionable actions that they did. The perspective number four is the societal perspective. So changing a perception over time. Social norms and values evolve. Things that have been totally normal and legal to say and morally correct to say 100-150 years ago, they may be totally inappropriate today. Yeah, so that's absolutely critical. So the N-word for describing dark-skinned people, black people, may have been okay 100-150 years ago, but it's definitely inappropriate today, and we just don't do this. And this then, today, leads towards cancel culture. The question, should problematic artists that created their word many, many years, centuries ago, shall they be canceled today? Or shall we view them in a historical and social context? It was okay to say certain things 150 years ago, which are not okay anymore today. So in German, we in Germany, we have people that want to rewrite books, children books, that use words that have been totally okay in the 60s or 70s of the 20th century, but they are not okay anymore. They want to rewrite that. So they want to fiddle around with my children books. And I find this totally inappropriate, because at that time it was okay to write it. There was nothing wrong with it. And now we take this work of great artists that are undoubtedly, absolutely great people, great thinkers, and rewrite that. And the question is this okay to do or not? So I have my personal opinion on this one, but I also understand people that say, no, we need to change the old art, all pieces of art, and adapt them to modern values and perspective. And the final thought line is the psychoanalytic and existentialist perspective. Art is a reflection of a universal human perspective. So philosophers like Sartre or Freud, See art as deeply rooted in the human psyche. And the personality of artists is less important than the universal themes it expresses. So art is taking thoughts, emotions, views to a generic point. And this then is the universal expression of art. And the artist itself, himself, herself, is not as important. So those are the five different views you can have, the five different approaches you can have to the question, is there or shall there be a separation between art and artist, between creator and product? And there is no clear answer on this one. It's highly complex. It depends heavily on personal perspectives. It depends on the context. It will change over time again. So when I talk about this one today, in 5 years, it might be totally different. And the argument that artwork stands on its own, that art is something that stands alone, that a product stands as a product, is also as acceptable as that the art and the artist, the creator and the product, are closely connected, cannot be separated. Some examples. You may remember a singer and dancer, pop artist called Michael Jackson. Everybody will do this, everybody knows. And then he created a lot of great music, and he connected or he bridged what is called black music and white music. I personally believe music has no color, but that's written everywhere, so I reflect that. He was called the King of Pop. And on the other side, he was connected with child abuse. So can we listen to his music? Can we still buy his records? Can we stream his songs? Although there is a strong indication that he committed child abuse. Similar with Eric Clapton, for example. He's a brilliant guitarist. I love his work of art, but he is known for making racist remarks in the 70s, a long time ago, but he did this. And some at that time stopped listening to his music. Same with John Lennon. He is a peace activist, a music icon, but there are still reports of violence against his first wife, and so his peace messages may have been more of a marketing move or not. So those are just three examples of rock and pop musicians that are doubtful. Same with Kevin Spacey, which is an outstanding actor, but abuse allegations. Woody Allen, a genius filmmaker, classical music he created, but he had an adoptive daughter, and his sexual relationship with her definitely raises moral concerns. Roman Polanski, also a brilliant movie director, doubtful personality. Pablo Picasso, the painter. He revolutionized the art with cubism, but to say it at least, his treatment of women was marked by abuse and power plays. But it's not a modern thing. Caravaggio, a master painter of the Baroque, was involved in violent crimes and even killed a man. J.K. Rowling, the creator of Harry Potter, had controversial statements about transgender issues, transgender people. H.P. Lovecraft is a horror legend. He has a couple of racist views. Ezra Pound, a poet, is a big supporter of fascism and an admirer of Mussolini, the Italian fascist. Yeah, and even guys like Martin Heidegger and Sigmund Freud are doubtful due to Martin. In case of Martin Heidegger, his close connection to the Nazis, And Sigmund Freud, he was pretty sexist guy. So you can see, in all areas of art and science, you can find personalities that created influential work, if you like it or not, but you can accept that Sigmund Freud is an influential psychoanalyst, that Heidegger is an influential philosopher, that Rowling is an influential writer, and so on and so on. And yeah, they created that, and either during they created the work or afterwards, it turned out that there's quite some doubt on their personalities, that they did things from a moral perspective that I cannot accept, and probably most of you will also not accept. And this is not limited to art and science, to music, writing, and painting, but we experience pretty much the same in the tech world. And this is not a modern phenomenon. I already mentioned it, Gottlieb Daimler and Carl Benz, they were the founders of Daimler-Benz or Mercedes-Benz cars. So two persons, they used their names and they were very strong personalities leading that. They never founded a common company. They worked independently and it was reunited later. But yeah, those were two big names. Same with Henry Ford. Henry Ford was the founder of Ford. He changed the automotive world and cars are connected with his name. Enzo Ferrari, the founder of Ferrari, or Ferruccio Lamborghini. Yeah? They are also personalities that created cars, and the cars, the products, were closely connected with their names, with their personality, with their appearance. It's not only in cars. I mean, beyond that, it's a Bosch. Huh? Bosch was founded by Robert Bosch, by a guy called Robert Bosch, and Siemens by a guy called Wernher von Siemens. Those are also two companies heavily influenced by their founders. And today we have it like Steve Jobs and Apple, Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook, Bill Gates and Microsoft, Jeff Bezos and Amazon, Richard Branson and Virgin. Yeah, they're closely together and they get a divine image. There are people that believe that Steve Jobs was close to God. Yeah, particularly in the case of Steve Jobs, it was said, hey, he is the number one guy and this is everything and I love this guy. And so names, brands, personalities and brands, persons and products can be closely connected. So that one name stands for a company, for a product, for a group of products or a service. And there are clear advantages of this one. So it gets easy to create an identity and a recognition of a brand, of a product. Now, a strong personality as a face of a brand creates a clear product identity. People associate the company directly with a single person and his or her value. Yeah, just like Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs turned Apple into a cult brand. Seeing it objectively, the products of Apple are very good, but they are far from perfect. But people believe that because Steve Jobs did it, Apple is divine. Well, it's perfect. And Steve Jobs had this perfectionism and a very visionary spirit. He was a strong leader in that. A trust and credibility. A charismatic figurehead can boost customer trust. Well, Bill Gates gave Microsoft credibility and stability over decades until even today, although he pulled himself out a long time ago. With a strong person representing a brand, people can create emotional connectivity and loyalty. Well, they can connect emotionally to the single personality and transfer that loyalty into the brand or the products. It's easier to create marketing and public relations things, PR. A person can represent a brand in the media far more effectively than a faceless corporation. Now, does anyone know what Samsung stands for? No, but we all know that what Tesla stands for because there is an Elon Musk and there is no Elon Musk of Samsung or any other brand. We can talk many, many other brands. Eh? Richard Branson, for example, is known for its spectacular marketing stunts and he boosts Virgin's visibility with all the crazy things he's doing, because he is Richard Branson and he's the owner, the founder, the creator, the face of Virgin. And with a strong person, with a strong leader, you can shape a company's vision. You can drive innovation. It's an innovation driver. So Henry Ford, for example, revolutionized the car manufacturing with the assembly line production that he had. And when there is light, there's also shade. When there is sun, there's always also darkness. There are risks. There are disadvantages connected with a strong person representing a brand or a product. So it's depending on one person. Yeah. If the entire brand depends on a single individual, problems arise when that person leaves or dies. So Apple struggled after Steve Jobs' death. After he passed away, they had big problems and they got back on track. But it was pretty hard for them. Scandals and missteps of that particular person. And that brings us more or less down to the point of this episode. Yeah? If the figurehead is involved in a scandal, the entire brand image suffers. So Zuckerberg constantly faces criticism over data privacy and manipulation, damaging Facebook's image. John McAfee became associated with conspiracy theories and crime. Yeah, hurting the brand of the McAfee virus software. A more political thing is the succession issue. So what happens if the key figure is gone? Often there is no clear succession plan. There are these super strong faces. They do not allow any other person coming up besides them. One example here is after Walt Disney passed away, the company lacked clear leadership for years. It's polarizing. It's polarization that we have here. Some entrepreneurs are highly polarizing. Yeah? They can alienate customers or investors. They can attract them or they can turn them down. So Bill Gates has always been a controversial figure as Microsoft CEOs. Limited scalability and diversification is a problem. Brands too closely tied to a single person may struggle to scale or diversify. So Virgin is closely linked to Branson. So if he stops working, if he passes away, if some of his super crazy stunt marketing stunts is going wrong, what happens after him? I have no idea. Maybe he has a follow-up inside the company. Maybe he has a deputy that can take over, but there's a high chance that this is not the case. So there's definitely no clear yes and no clear no. Whether you should have this or not, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. Let's now connect all the dots that I have put out, all the thoughts, all the lines of thought I have put out here. Let's put them together. So let's talk about Tesla and Elon Musk. First of all, a personal remark, like a little footnote that I would like to make here. Definitely a great guy, definitely a lot of tech achievements, and first of all, an unbelievable execution power. Whatever thought he has, he puts it into reality, he puts it into a company, a product, a service, right away. No doubt about this. And on the other hand, I personally find him a very questionable figure. So he has the temperament of a grumpy three-year-old, an egonomic, without any bounds, any limits. And so maybe this kind of character is required to be a person like him. But it doesn't make him an idol. It doesn't make him a role model for anyone at all. Yes, he's the richest man of the world. But is he a good person? I personally have my doubts. Second point, Tesla cars. They are undoubtedly innovative cars. Tesla cars put a focus on e-mobility. They made it popular. They showed it's possible. Yeah? And they're having the new interior concepts. No buttons on large screens. There's a lot of technical innovation in Teslas, like the central computing device, the software orientation. So Tesla cars are the first rolling models of a software-defined vehicle. On the other hand, they are built beyond the software and electronics part. They are built of the cheapest components they could get. Now, they always have the cheapest suppliers for anything that is in the automotive area. And this is my core point, I find the usability of the cockpits very questionable. No cluster instrument, the big central center stack screen, all these are not things that have real advantages in usability. And it's not anyhow innovative. It's not driven by the idea we want to make the cars different. It's driven by the idea we want to make cars cheap, because touchscreens are cheaper than buttons, and so we put a big touchscreen into it, and then we have it. And there is a reason why for 120, 130 years, car cockpits developed into what they are today, with a steering wheel and a cluster instrument behind the steering wheel, some secondary interactions on the center stack. There's good reasons for this, because it works, it functions, it works since many, many, many years, and saying, hey, I just want to make it different, selling it as innovation, but just wanting to save money is not a fair deal. But this is my personal view on Tesla cars. It's the corporate strategy that I see doubtful. It's the overpromotion of the automated driving features, the full driving service, full driving software that they're having there. It's not full driving, definitely not. The point is, although Tesla in itself seemed to be a very quick and very focused company, the updates of the cars, the facelifts, are coming too late, and the Tesla cars are a little outdated already today. And so new models are lacking, facelifts are lacking, big problem. But end of footnote here, this is my personal opinion about Elon Musk and Tesla. Half a minute about the background. Tesla Motors was founded in 2003 by Martin Eberhardt and Mark Tarpening in San Carlos in California. And they used the 19th century inventor Nikola Tesla's name to do this. Musk, opposed to what he is saying, is not the founder of Tesla. He joined in February 2004. Half a year after they found it, during a funding round as an investor. Became chairman of the board, but he's not the founder. Yeah. But under his leadership, Tesla launched the first cars and are a car company until today. The key question of this episode is, can, should, or must I separate Tesla vehicles from Elon Musk? Elon Musk in the past half a year or 9 months became, from my point of view, he was always very doubtful, but it's a political doubtful person. He is working closely with the Trump administration, and he also supports the German AfD party, which it's in parts fascist, and he used during the inauguration of Donald Trump fascist gestures. So I don't know whether he is doing this from a marketing point of view, whether this is part of the story he's doing this, or if he is really believing in these right-wing political opinions. Anyway, it seems like most of the people believe that Musk and Tesla are closely connected, and since he gained a more political role, Tesla's market cap dropped by 45% after a peak of $1.5 trillion in last December. Since he started this Dodge activity, the Department of Government Efficiency, basically firing people that work for the government, since then the value of his company dropped to half of it. In Germany, I have the figures here, Tesla registrations fell dramatically. In February, 1,429 new Teslas were registered, which is a drop of 76%, compared to February 2024. In January, the decline was 60%. So since Elon Musk is playing a total role, more than 70% of the sales dropped in Germany. So we have this, and we have at least a growing or stable electric car market, opposed to what people say. So there is sales on this one, and some of the electric car companies are growing in this one, but Tesla is dropping 70%, which I believe is pretty serious. So the political activity of Elon Musk have hurt Tesla's stock and sales, which means people connect Tesla and Musk. His link to the Trump administration led to a loss of trust amongst investors and customers. And so this is a perfect illustration of the challenge of separating the work from the creator, of creating the product from the creator, of creating art and artist. So there's a political interference, there's scandals and controversies, and there's the customer view. People just don't want this. They don't want to be identified with Elon Musk just because they bought a Tesla. And the crazy thing is that a vast majority of Tesla buyers in Germany is more of the liberal left community in Germany. Wealthy people that have a liberal, open-minded view on the world. And now Elon pops up at right the other end of the political spectrum, which causes problems. So Tesla is probably the victim of the inseparably connection between creator and creation. Tesla is still a technical and economic success, but the activities of Musk endanger the brand at the moment. So, great example of my thoughts triggered by this sticker on a car I saw 2 weeks ago. And arts and music, it's about perception. It's about personal decisions. And business, this close connection of a person and a brand, a person and a product, can turn into a matter of survival. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time, take care, and stay healthy.